Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. What's up, guys? You did it. You found your way to part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity for February the 24th, 2006. My name is James Gutman, and this show is sponsored by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. Guys, we're about to be joined on the phone line by the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Christian Cage. That always happens. And he's actually going to be here on the phone line talking a little bit about his time in WWE, his time in TNA, some of the things going on in his career. Most importantly, can I ask him about that shirt that he wore when he was in the Brood? I always wondered about that. So yeah, we're going to bring him on in a second. Just some quick in-house notes. You guys know if you go to the site, we got everything going up, different columns every day. Tom Pritchard's up there. We got guest columns from Dave, It's Still Real to Me, Wills. We got Chris Naraki from Tough Enough writing his guest column. Should have something new soon, too. A lot of stuff going on the website. But also, we've just set up a MySpace account. Found out about this. And I don't personally have one, but Zah actually helped us out. He set one up. So if you're on MySpace and, you know, you have people on your friend list, well, make us your friend. Friendship is cool. So if you're on MySpace, add us, put us on your friend list, I guess is what they call it. So hook it up. Do it up. World Wrestling Insanity. Just continuing on and on. Plenty of stuff going on. All right. So you're listening to this for one reason, and I don't think it's to listen to me. It is to hear the one, the only NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. So,
brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
So everybody out there, no matter where you are, if this is on your iPod or you're on your computer, put your hands together because we have the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion on the phone line, Christian Cage. Christian, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. What's going on?
Not much, man. You are definitely the talk of the wrestling community right now, the brand new World's Heavyweight Champion for TNA.
It's pretty crazy, man. Every time, done some interviews, and every time, I hear them announce you as the world champion, it's kind of a little surreal, since the day that I stepped foot in the ring, my first match in the business, my goal was to become a world heavyweight champion, so to be able to do it, feels good.
Well, what's cool, too, is, you're an old-school wrestling fan, like a lot of our listeners out there, and it almost is like, if you can't go, and it's either WWF title, WWE title, or the NWA title, two of the big ones out there. So, it's got to mean more for a wrestling fan like yourself to come up and win the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, obviously with the lineage of a title like the NWA title, you got so many great champions like Harley Race and Ric Flair and Jack Briscoe with Dory Funk Jr. and names like that. It's just to kind of hold the same belt that they had. It's it's a big honor.
Well, now walk me through this. You went to TNA, you beat Jarrett for the title. Right after you won the title, you stepped back into the locker room. What were some of the things that went on, some of the people that came up to you? Who were some of the people you spoke to afterwards?
Yeah, it was just, it was very humbling experience. Most of the guys came up and shook my hand and congratulated me. And it was funny because almost every one of them said, "You deserve it." And that, to me, meant more than anything that anybody else could have said. That really, made me feel good and 12 years of hard work and obviously with the big decision whether I should stay in WWE or whether I should leave, and ultimately I left and just justified everything any decision that I made and that I made the right choice to come to TNA and everyone's really excited about the future there, and I'm really excited about my future and the future of the company, so I'm just really excited.
See, we had actually Rhino on a few weeks ago, and we spoke about kind of that vindication that you get from going from kind of being a mid-card guy in WWE, because towards the tail end, you were almost in that Rob Van Dam spot where especially myself trying to write something online, I would look for a wrestler who's being kind of held back, and you know, you're one of the names that would pop in, and now you're the champion, so it's got to be better than almost, you know, money or things like that, just vindication for what you do.
It comes to a point, too, where money doesn't even matter anymore, you know, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to do well financially for my 8 years with WWE. I was there for the years where business was really good, and you know, I always did well financially. But sometimes there comes a point in your career where you just have to kind of examine everything and see what makes you happy. And sometimes money isn't just what makes you happy. You know, sometimes there's other things. And I felt like I was more than just a Vanguard guy. You know, I felt like I had the goods. I felt like that I, whatever situation I was put out there with, that I delivered. And no matter if it was a tap in the back, if it was a live shot in the back, if it was a promo in the ring or a match, I felt that I would, you know, 9.5 times out of 10 come through. And you know, it was one of those things that you just, you know, I can't put a finger on what happened, and just, you know, I was just of the mind that I didn't want anything handed to me, and I'd never had anything handed to me in the business before, and I always worked for everything that I had, and I'd have no problem and never will have a problem working for what I want. And I just wanted one chance with the, I felt that I had earned the right for a chance to run with the ball, and every time I would get it, I would start to run with it and say, no, it's, you know, give us the ball back, it's not the time yet. And then, you know, and I just wanted that one chance to really run with it and just go and just let me go. And then if I, you know, if I were to drop it, I'd have been the first one to hand the ball back and say, I tried, it didn't work, I'll do whatever you want me to do. But I never really felt that I got the chance to really run and keep running.
Well, so that's actually what makes you more unique than a lot of the guys who kind of went through a similar situation, not just because you left, but there were so many false starts where it seemed like they were just about to put you to the next level, and then you get pulled back. I mean, let's talk a little bit about SmackDown. When you jumped over to SmackDown last April, I mean, there was ever a time where people thought you were ready to break out on the WWE roster, was then, and it just didn't seem to work out.
Yeah, I know, and it's funny because, you know, I was legitimately, you know, I was a little, you know, taken back by that I was going to SmackDown because of the stuff that I had going on with Cena, and the crowd really seemed to be responding to that and wanting to see it, and I wanted to see it, you know, and I really wanted to get into more verbal exchanges with them and things like that, and I ended up, you know, I got told after the Vengeance pay-per-view, it was actually that night after the Triple Threat at Vengeance, that I was going to SmackDown the next day because it was a super show in Anaheim. And, you know, I try to look at the bright side. Hey, this show is wide open. They got a lot of talent there, and it would be a great chance for me to step up and do my thing there. So I was really excited about it, and that never came through either. So, I mean, I'd never been one of these guys that wanted to become bitter and complain and that sort of thing, and I just didn't want to become that guy, you know, and I had, you know, the majority of my years at WWE were great. I enjoyed them, and I just didn't want to come to a point where I was like, you know what, this saying bad things and doing bad things, or just thought that my contract's up and I have a chance to do something here that not many people get to do, and that's walk away on their own terms. And I felt strongly that at this point in my life that was something that needed to be done.
That's one of the things that actually that you did that's really amazing to a lot of people. With so many people always talk about, oh, so-and-so should leave and maybe go to TNA. And in the end, almost everybody chooses to kind of do what's safe. And you went, and you had faith in your ability, and you went to TNA. What was the decision like, you know, not only for you, but for your family and some of the people that you spoke to before making it?
Actually, you know, the only person that I really talked to about leaving WWE, I talked to you know, a couple close people, but the person I really confided in most was obviously my wife, and I talked to her about it, and I said to her, you know, one day I was really confused, and we were coming down the flyer, I think it was in the last week of my contract with WWE, and they had a new deal for me, and they were, you know, calling me, asking me to sign it and bring it back, and I wasn't sure yet what I wanted to do, and so I had asked her, I said, you know, tell me what you think I should do. And she just kind of laughed and said, hey, you know, she said, you know, this is up to you. She said, this is, you know, your dream was to be a wrestler. You know, your dream was to wrestle for the WWE. This is everything that you worked your whole life for. And this is a decision that you have to make on your own. I don't want to tell you what to do. She said, all I will do is that whatever decision you make will be the right one, which I thought was a great you know, great thing for her to say, and that she showed a lot of confidence in me in that respect, that, you know, what I did, that she, you know, felt that I would be successful at it. So that was really reassuring and really helped me with my decision.
Well, let me ask you this, because you go into the situation, you go to TNA, you walk into the locker room. What were some of the first people you spoke to? I mean, obviously the Dudleys were there and a lot of people you worked with before. Who were some of the people you spoke to, and what was the reaction when you first showed up there?
You know, it was funny when I got there because, you know, it's weird because, you know, you get a comfort level when you've been somewhere for so long. And, you know, with WWE, I knew all the faces backstage, knew all the guys. I was one of the guys that had been there at the time the longest. So I was one of the veterans, one of the guys that I felt like a lot of the younger guys came to talk to and stuff like that, which was very nice. And you know, going there was kind of like being the new kid in school, you know. You go and you see some familiar faces that you've seen on the show, because I watched TNA as much as I could, and, you know, obviously the faces that I did recognize, that the 3D and Rhino and you know, Billy Gunn and guys like that, and so, yeah, I mean, it was weird, but it was funny because everybody seemed to really, you know, kind of greet me with open arms, which was nice, and realized that, you know, I just was there and I just wanted to come in and help out in any way that I could, and really, you know, be a part of the show, that I wasn't just coming to collect a paycheck, you know. So it was, I really felt right off the bat that the guys there kind of welcomed me and made me feel, you know, a part of the team right away, which was pretty important to me, and, you know, made me feel comfortable right away.
That's cool. I mean, you actually sound, from watching on TV, and one of the main things about your character is that you always kind of, even when you're doing a serious storyline, you always look like you're enjoying yourself and having fun out there. When you were in WWE, at what point did it stop being fun for you?
Well, it was, I can't say that it was always not fun, because, I mean, once I got in the ring, everything went away anyways. You know, I mean, once I got in the ring, no matter how I was feeling about anything, I felt like I was 100% professional, and always did the job that was asked of me. And you know, I just, like I said, it was many different things. It was creative frustration, obviously. You know, not knowing where I was, what direction I was going in, and seemingly couldn't get any answers from anybody. I was, you know, also burnt out from being on the road for 8 years straight without a break, you know, 250 plus days a year. So I would say probably the last 8 months to a year, maybe 6 months to a year, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range was when I really started to get a little bit more burnt out on it.
Well, I mean, help me understand this, though. Were you ever given I mean, because you're a guy that went from WWE to TNA, and you didn't just achieve success in TNA, you became their world champion. So, obviously, you had some sort of skill set that WWE wasn't fully utilizing. What reasons did they ever give you for not giving you the push? Did you ever hear anything? You ever told anything?
You know, it's funny. I mean, it's weird. I mean, you know, sometimes it'd be like, well, you know, when I had long hair, sometimes they'd say, well, you know, look, maybe you need to cut your hair, and you need to do this. And the thing is, I wanted to cut my hair, but they wanted me to cut my hair. It was at a time when I didn't think it was the right time, mm-hmm. which was during the Un-American stint, which was something I really didn't feel strongly about. And I felt like I wanted to wait till it really meant something where I was kind of featured and kind of on my own, and that's what I, you know, ultimately held out to do. When I finally cut my hair and changed my look and all that, it was the right time. So, you know, I don't know. It was, you know, I can't put a finger on it. You know, I wish I knew. And you know, I mean, and every time I try to figure it out, it just get myself more confused. And I said, you know, I mean, I don't want to be a bitter person. Like I said, I had accomplished things there that maybe people didn't think I could accomplish, or you know, with whatever, you know, form they gave me, I made the best of it. And obviously, I think it was off to end there with the crowd reactions and stuff that I was getting. That the fans taught me or wanted to see me perform on a different level, and I know that I could perform on a different level, and it never happened. So everything happens for a reason, and maybe this was just all the arrows pointing that I should be in TNA and performing here. That's where I ended up, and I'm happy.
Exactly. I mean, you talk about karma. It's almost an irony in the sense that you and Edge both won world titles so close to each other in different promotions.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been strange if we had them at the same time.
Yeah. Did you have you spoken to him since you won the belt? What did he have to say?
We actually, I don't. We've kind of, actually we did talk briefly on the phone, but the night that I won the title, he sent me a text message congratulating me.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's almost for a lot of fans, it reminds them of Guerrero and Benoit last year at WrestleMania, kind of, you know, here's Edge and Christian, you know, for years finally getting the shot, and it's all at the same time in different banners. That's actually a pretty cool situation for everybody.
Yeah, it is cool. Just it's a shame that he didn't get a little bit of longer chance to run with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because this is one question. It's kind of off the beaten path. You, Edge, Gangrel, all part of the Brood. What exactly was it about Edge? Was he just too good for the Seinfeld shirt, or was it just a personal preference that he didn't wear? What was that about?
It was fun. It was actually funny because the Brood, when I first came in, you know, the storyline, I guess, was that I would, you know, you know, Gangrel kind of had me, his younger brother, under his spell, and, you know, I guess to kind of get me back, he joined the Brood or whatever the storyline was, and he did his own thing anyway before he got in the Brood, and I think he was smart with it because I didn't want to wear the puffy shirt either. It was really uncomfortable to wrestle in, and, you know, not to mention that I ironed it before every match.
Oh, man.
But, you know, when I came in, I said, oh, no, we want you guys to look the same. We'd really like for you to wear the puffy shirt and, you know, just coming in. And we're like, okay, yeah, sure, no problem. We'll do whatever you want. And, you know, so, but, the Brood was cool, man. We had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, Dave Heath is a great guy. And I actually recently saw him not too long ago. And he's doing pretty good. So, you know, it was a good time. It was a good time.
Awesome, man. I know you're in a hurry, but let me just ask you a few more questions before we let you go.
Sure.
If you can go back in history, as a wrestling fan and somebody who's watched as much as you can, if you could have the chance to go back and face anybody in wrestling history at any time, who would you pick?
Wrestling as a heel? Wrestling as a heel, I think that I would love to go back and have just like a 30 to 60 minute match with Ricky Steamboat.
That'd be cool. I mean, Steamboat was one of the trainers back in WWE when you were on your way out there. But that must have been cool for you as a fan.
Yeah, no, it was cool too. You know, he would come up and we'd talk and things like that. And you know, it was nice to hear him because he would, you know, tell me that he was, you know, that he was a fan of my work and that you know, he enjoyed watching me and stuff like that. And so that meant a lot when you hear guys like that say stuff like that.
Anybody in TNA that you would pick if you could wrestle one guy on the card that you know, you'd like to get a chance to face off with down the line? Who would it be?
And it's like a clean slate for me there right now. There's so many fresh guys that I have never even been in the ring with. So I mean, God, it's hard to just pick just one. You know, I'd really like to. I mean, Abyss, the guy is just awesome for a big guy. He's one of the, if not the best working big man right now. The guy's really talented. Obviously Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels. I mean, God, there's just so many guys that are down. I got Monty Brown at the next pay-per-view, and he's got such tremendous potential as a performer. So, I mean, it's hard to pick just one right now in TNA because the guys there are so fresh and so raring to go. So it's gonna be a lot of fun there. Looking to big things in the future there, especially with us going prime time in April, which is exciting for everybody.
Yeah, that's gotta be cool too. I mean, especially now you're going into the next show. You were just talking about against Monty Brown, and I mean, you're heading into it. It has a distinction of being one of the first or one of the only non-Jarrett headline pay-per-views in a while. Excited about going in there with Monty?
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's you know, kind of you know, the face of TNA is changing a little bit, you know, and it's you know, it's good. It's good to have, keep things fresh and keep it changing, kind of, you know, shuffle things around to keep everybody interested. So it's a fun time right now.
Let me ask you this right before I let you go. You talk about the 12 years you've been in the business before winning the world title. What advice would you give to frustrated performers out there, whether they're in WWE or on the indies or whatnot? What advice would you give them to kind of be able to hold in there and be able to achieve their dream?
I think the piece of advice is the way I always felt is, and I mean, it's a cliche, but always believe in yourself. And it's funny because no matter what I was doing on the show, no matter who I was in the ring with or you know, what the finish was or whatever, I always, you know, went out there with the mind frame that I was going to steal the show. And whether I was doing a promo or like I said before, a backstage segment or whatever it was, I wanted to do something that was going to stand out from the guy beside me. And you know, and just go out there there and believe in yourself. And like I said, you know, I mean, there's so many obstacles within this business, like any business, and it's just, you really have to just hone your craft and become as good as you possibly be as an all-around performer. Because I just think at the state of today's sport, it's good to be good in one facet, but you have to be versed in all of them to succeed. So just try to get your all-around game and polish that up as far as promos and wrestling and persona and look, all those things. It all has to be one big package, and that would be my advice. It's kind of long-winded, but that's my advice.
That's cool. Actually, I mean, you brought up one point that I've talked to people who have been on the show before about. A lot of the young wrestlers who came up watching the late 90s wrestling that you were a big part of, and I had asked other people, I think Spike Dudley, whether you feel that a lot of the young guys today only took the high spots out of your matches and tried to emulate it, not realizing that there were other facets that went into it. Do you find that there's a lot of guys who...
I think more so on independent shows. I haven't been to an independent show for a long time, but from what I hear, I mean, they're just like car crashes. Uh-huh. And, yeah, you know what I mean? It's there's a way to build to high spots to make them mean more and to sell them properly. I mean, you don't want to throw anything away, and you know, you keep raising the bar, and I mean, where do you go from there? I mean, I don't know, but it's... I feel like, honestly, I feel like psychology is starting to creep its way back in and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's kind of how I feel about that.
No. All right, Christian, man, before we let you go, you got a lot of readers out there who are big supporters of you, very happy about you winning the title. What do you have to say to your fans out there?
I just wanted to say, everybody, all the peeps, you know, thanks for supporting me, and especially supporting me, you know, with my move to TNA, and you know, I really appreciate it, and words can't express, you know, how happy I am about that, and that you know, the kind of reaction and stuff. I mean, like I said, you know, I was basically booed for 12 years, and now getting cheered, it's a new thing for me. So I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to having some more fun in the future.
All right. Christian Cage, congratulations again, man. The NWA World Champion, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
Well, there you go, guys. Christian Cage joining us on the phone line, taking a time out to talk to us here at JG's Radio Free Insanity. Really cool to have him on. Very happy to have him on the show. We are out of time, guys. We're not going to be able to get to the moment of insanity this week. Check back next week. We will have it. We'll also have another guest on next week. So, yeah, I mean, these shows have been great so far. I mean, I talk every week about the people we've had on, but it's been a lot of fun to get a chance to hear some of these wrestlers and some of the people in the industry talk a little bit about their experiences and kind of hear it firsthand. Very diverse group of people we've had. Everyone from Samoa Joe to you know, Nick Bockwinkel. It's been up and down the pike of the guests that we've had, and there's only more coming. I've had people ask me about the archives of these shows as well. There is going to be an archive soon enough. I will keep you guys updated on that. You don't want to miss it. So in the meanwhile, folks, I will be back next week with some more Radio Free Insanity, and I'll be back on Monday with JG's Raw Insanity. So until we next meet, this is James Gutman and everybody at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com saying be well, and thanks for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.